Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of RealCom Live. Boy, have we got a great show for you. I don't know, somehow, some way, we just seem to travel the world and find great stories to share with you, and today is going to be no exception. We have got a phenomenal guest, Bobby Tincher, who is with the University of Kentucky, Utility Systems Manager in Energy Management. What a gem. This woman has been working tirelessly for 20 years on the development of smart buildings, campuses, hence the University of Kentucky. And when you hear her story, when and how she started and what she's been doing for the last 20 years, it's going to encourage a whole bunch of people to use her success and her strategy in putting together their smart building, smart city, smart campus, smart district plans. It is really my pleasure to have Bobby on the show. And with that, why don't we bring her on and get our conversation started? Hello, Bobby. How are you?
Hello. How are you?
You know, I've been, ever since I first met you at ControlsCon and we had our conversation, I have been a real fan. And I know after talking to you a number of times now that you're a pretty humble person. You don't necessarily like the limelight, but I believe you're a star. And we're going to do our best to let everybody know about you. And so you can share your pearls of wisdom on them. And where a lot of people have theories on what a smart building, smart campus is, I think once our listeners hear your experience, they're going to know you are the real deal. And your insight and your experience will be valuable in the creation of their own strategy. So thanks for being on today.
Thank you.
So let's start with your career, your journey. Maybe, you know, high school, you kind of like computers a little bit. Where'd you go to college? Get us up to the point where you get your job at the University of Kentucky.
Okay, absolutely. Well, I am from a small town in Kentucky, Mount Sterling, Kentucky, kind of the gateway to the mountains. So only one high school there, and that is where I started to get my interest in computers. I had a programming class in high school. And so from there, I went to the University of Kentucky, and I worked towards a computer science degree, software specialization. And I graduated in 1998 from the University of Kentucky. And then I went to work for a company here in Central Kentucky called Manpower. It's a staffing company, but I actually worked in the office as a network administrator, and I did training, computers and that sort of thing. So I worked there for about 3 years. Doing networking, I networked all of our Ohio offices and our Central Kentucky offices. Saw the job posting here at the university for an information systems technical support person. And I thought, well, that sounds like it's more in my field. So I applied for that job, came on in for the interview, and they started asking me all these questions about HVAC. So being a small town girl, I didn't even know what HVAC meant. I asked them what that stood for. The director at the time explained heating and ventilation, air conditioning. And so I was very honest with him. I told him we had a box fan when I was a kid. We stuck it in the window. And that was about the extent of that. So he said, well, I think we can teach you HVAC.
So let's pause for a minute. This is 20 years ago, and the head of facilities has the insight to hire somebody with IT experience.
Yes.
Who was that person, and how did they get that vision?
So that was Ed McClure. He was the director of the physical plant division. Under the facility management umbrella here at the university at that time for the medical center. So he focused mainly on the medical center buildings, hospitals, and research. And we started with one hospital at that time. So we had our Chandler Hospital, and he had done a lot of research. He was really, you know, a forward thinker, and he He knew there had to be a better way than looking at multiple systems. At the time that I started, they had a Barbara Coleman CB system and Johnson Medicis 8540 PMI system. And I believe they had just gotten a Siemens system. And so they weren't really quite sure what to do. And our dispatchers were looking at different screens and monitoring different things and trying to keep up. And so we, he hired me to kind of find a way to merge all that together.
Well, and at some point we may want to get him on the show because the insight of 20 years ago, understanding that in order for facilities to go forward in an innovative way, you had to partner with IT. That was revolutionary. To this day, right today, we still have organizations who've not understood that that has to happen if you really expect to take facilities to another level. So it would be a great story if it was today. It's a phenomenal story given that it was 20 years ago.
Absolutely. And I was blessed to have him as a director at that time. One of the things with facilities is it's a very busy business. It's extremely fast-paced and chaotic at times. And he allowed me to slow down and actually focus on the integration of buildings. And so that was huge because it's, you know, such a huge piece. He had actually already purchased Tritium R2 package when he hired me. And there was a lot of buildings that weren't online. There were probably about 10 Barbara Coleman devices. And I think.
Let's break the conversation down into three sections. Your first few years, you know, what did you do when you were first got there? Then kind of that big middle, and then that's going to bring us right up to today.
Absolutely. So when I first got here, I was tasked with getting the three systems that they had, the CB Barbara Coleman signal system and the Johnson PMI system and the new Siemens system all on the same Tritium platform.
That was your first project.
That was my first project. Had no experience with Tritium.
That's hysterical.
So I used my resources. I bought a server, loaded the software up, and started looking at my director. He had at that time had decided that he wanted to go with BACnet across campus. So I got really familiar really fast with BACnet and that communication protocol and how the difference between open and proprietary. So we had these proprietary systems and we wanted to integrate into one system. So there had to be a way to do that. So we started with that. They were all legacy systems. So they all talked a different language. So the best way to do that was to start break it into pieces one by one, a more agile approach, if you will. So we started with the CB system, the signal system, and there was a push for me and the folks at Tritium to get an ASD driver. So we started with old universal network controllers that were a really big version of a Jace, and we actually put them on the wall right next to the old global control modules, the GCMs from the Barbara
Coleman. You were in the weeds. I mean, yeah. You're inventing things at this point.
Right. There was no, I didn't know any other way to do it. So that
first few years, was it more discovery? Did you have any aha moments? Did you accomplish anything really?
I did actually. I got those systems online I actually got that system online within my first year at UK, those three systems.
Wow. Wow.
So, and I did discover a lot. There were a lot of layers that had to happen. There was a lot of involvement with IT, ports that had to be open,
right,
allow the traffic flow, you know, I learned that a lot of our vendors at that time used default settings for BACnet. So the 47808 port, everybody uses that. Well, there's other ports you can use, other BACnet ports you can use. There's other instance numbers. There were conflicts that I had to work through.
So we're going to run out of time and this could go for hours. So I'm going to have to, all right. So let's fast track from 3 years all the way to today, everything in between. Give us number of points on the system. You know, how many buildings are attached to the network? And then what are the fun things or the really interesting things that you've seen and been able to accomplish as far as connecting facility systems to the network?
So I think when I got here, we had about 15 devices on three different systems. And today we have almost 5,000 devices. It's 4,726 devices campus-wide. It's our medical center. We now have three hospitals integrated in, and our research facilities and our classroom and campus side. We have a point count of 376,000 points.
Wow.
So very large, and we're still integrating every day. We're actually in the process. We're about 50% done with bringing campus devices online to our Niagara 4.
So it's pretty safe to say that when a new building or new project is slated to come online, your protocols are in place, they're robust. This is not guesswork anymore. You've got a science to this.
Yes, so you have to get, one of the biggest things you have to do is get your standards, your instrumentation and control standards written and even, you know, approved within you have to get everyone on the same page approved within your university. So the IT folks know what you're doing and the traffic you're going to be passing, and the facilities folks know what you're going to be installing, and the training can be done so on how to use the system for troubleshooting, because it's a tool. It's a tool for not only our facilities maintenance technicians, but our customers use it. At our hospital, we have dashboards for a lot of the Joint Commission surveying requirements, refrigerator temps, humidity temps, pressure, room pressurization, all of that stuff. We do reporting and alarming. We have 26,000 histories across campus right now. We've got over 900 schedules that we do for energy management. Most of that is on the campus side because our hospitals are 24/7.
So what are some of the, give me just a couple, two, three of the most interesting things that you've automated on the campus?
We've done some fire alarm.
Which is very unusual. Yep.
Right. We're not UL listed, so we do have our dialers and our fire alarm panels in each building like normal, like you would. But we do a lot of fire alarm locations of smoke detectors, tamper switches, pull stations, that sort of thing. We've done elevators, which is very difficult. The elevator industry has not caught up with BACnet and the HVAC automation industry at all. So it's very difficult.
So you're pushing them as well. Just like you pushed Tritium 20 years ago, you're now pushing the elevator industry.
We are, and it's a struggle, but it's well worth having that stuff online, knowing when you have elevators down, especially in a hospital setting, knowing
absolutely
where we have to take patients and what direction we have to go. And then one of the best things that I've done that has just really helped us from an efficiency standpoint is we integrated our Tritium system to our work management system, which is SAP.
Wow.
So when we generate an alarm on Tritium, it automatically creates a notification in our work management system.
How long has that been in place?
That has been in place for about 10 years, almost 10 years.
Wow. I mean, I've been coming to our conference for 23 years, obviously, right? And I sit in these session rooms and I talk about people sitting on stage saying, we could do this. Boy, wouldn't it be great if we did this? And you're telling me 10 years ago, you had already got to multiple levels of systems integration and you're integrated it into your management system, your maintenance yes. management system, 10 years ago.
Yes.
You are the best kept secret in this industry. I'm telling you, I'm telling you.
Keep your head down and keep going.
No. All right. We got to take a brief break. We will be right back because I got a few more questions I want to answer or get to. All right, let's get right back with Bobby Tincher from the University of Kentucky. Watching the Willow commercial, that's going to be a whole other episode on what you're planning with digital twins, right? So I honestly, we're going to have you back because I want to at some point go much deeper into all the things you've done in the campus because, you know, in 10 minutes, we can't even begin to cover it. But thank you for those highlights. One of the things I do want to spend a couple minutes on are there's been a lot of folks saying that we need to diversify the industry. We got to get more people, more women into the industry. And there's nobody who agrees more than us. But we've looked at the engineering roles, you know, for the last 20 years, predominantly male. We've looked at the building maintenance facilities industry, pretty much male dominated. Let's have a little conversation about how you as a young IT professional, as a woman, how you dove into a male dominated facilities management organization at the university and have had so much success.
I think a lot of the maintenance staff would tell you that I'm just really mean.
Yeah.
So I bullied my way through.
Mean. You don't look mean.
But it is difficult being in facilities management predominantly with men. I think there's a lot of proving yourself that has to happen.
Really?
Done quite a bit of proving myself over the years. I've gone out in the field with them hands on so that they know I'm right there with them, gaining that trust, building that trust, doing what I say I'm going to do, knowing what I'm supposed to know, that sort of thing. Building that trust is really
how many years did it take you to get to build that fundamental trust?
I would say it was within the first 5 years that I was here. It took some time.
Okay. And was that because you were new, because you were from the IT side, or because you're a woman?
Maybe a little of both.
Okay. Okay. So it was a combination of things. And then once that trust was established, what was the last 15 years like? I mean, was it clear, smooth sailing? Did you still have some bumps? And how are you regarded today?
Once I established that trust, it was pretty smooth. We worked as a team in the facilities industry. I recently came over to campus and started integration there, so I'm building some trust on campus. But a lot of those folks knew me from the medical center side, so it's not as difficult to build that trust there. So that's been helpful, just that I've been around both sides of campus. And honestly, a lot of men here at the University of Kentucky just don't look at the fact that I'm a woman. There's a lot of folks ahead of me, like Ed McClure, that, you know, looked past the fact that I didn't know anything about HVAC. Over here on campus, there was a gentleman named Galen Tolliver, and he had been in here at campus doing controls in a command center for 30 plus years, and he took me under his wing, showed me a lot of stuff. So he's been a huge asset to me, and then just having the support from the Tritium team, Kevin Williamson having his support and backup, and now with the Cochran folks. Scott Cochran, you know, has been a big, huge support. So I think as I have grown as an individual and gained that trust currently, as I sit here as a utility systems manager, I'm a lot of the times I'm the go-to person when things can't be figured out.
So what do you say to a young woman, you know, coming up, either, you know, whatever studies they may be doing in college, how do you get more women into this industry interested?
I think the fact that I am a woman, it has drawn more folks to apply. I actually have a female on our controls team now. She's very young. She's moving quickly. She's learning quickly. I give her every opportunity to grow and teach her everything that I know. I actually, our VP, Mary Vosovich, she is open to allowing that growth and the women in facilities. So, and she is just a huge role model to us as well.
You are charting courses and setting new standards on so many fronts, you know, on a technical side, on an organizational side, you know, on a diversity side. You're just getting A pluses across the report card. And look at this. We got somebody commenting, great story. Hats off to you. I think once people see this, and hopefully this becomes a little viral, we're gonna get more women interested in the industry, and most importantly, we're gonna show you know, what is possible going back 20 years, not hype, you know, not fake news, but legitimate, slow and steady, hard work, what it does. All right, we only got a couple minutes left. What is next? I mean, you've accomplished so much. What do you got a plan for the future?
So moving forward, my next step is really analytics, the analytics piece, preventative maintenance, predictive maintenance, trying to use the system and the technology that we have to try to reduce the chaos in our facilities world and take care of these issues before they become huge issues and emergencies. So that's really where my path's going. There's also an event, a scheduler software that we use here on campus that I would like to integrate to, so that when we do scheduling, it can we can use that event, so we know what's going on in the classrooms, we know what conference rooms and auditoriums are being used when, so that we can definitely, you know, not have an air handler off trying to save energy when we have, you know, 10,000 people in an auditorium, you know, for an event. So
how about things like delivery robots, autonomous vehicles, drone surveillance? Are those type of things on your radar? Do you collaborate with other parts of the university?
We do collaborate with the other parts of the university on that. I know our IT communications team is looking at some drone surveillance for different projects and stuff. So I've been, I've had a small role in that, but very, very aware of it. We haven't done much in the way of robotics or anything like that as of yet, but I can sure see it in our future.
Well, these are all the things that we'll talk about at that Smart Campus Summit that butts up against RealCom and IBCon. We bring out those case studies from around the world so you can all see what each other is doing, and then go back to your universities and, you know, continue the journey. So, Bobby, unfortunately, we are out of time, and I won't forget to bring on Howard. I know you were going to remind me in case I did. Yeah. I did that once, hopefully never again. But I got to tell you, absolute pleasure. Hopefully you will come back. We are hopefully going to be able to use you as a resource for young women, young men, anybody who has a desire to plot a course on making a building smart, a campus smart. You have a lot to offer, and I just want to say thank you for being here today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
All right. You have a wonderful day and a great weekend.
All right. You too. Thank you.
Be well. All right. Boy, what a pleasure. What an absolute pleasure. With that, I'm going to bring on my buddy, Howard Berger, who's going to give us a little update on the news this week. And Howard, what'd you think of that conversation?
Oh, I thought that was fantastic. I think Bobby's story could potentially inspire a lot of young folks looking for a career to even start considering IT and facilities engineering. And the same with women who might never consider, facilities as a career. I think her story is so inspirational.
She is a role model on so many levels. I'm gonna get out of your hair so you can do the news. I'll be back in a minute.
Thanks, Jim. So as Jim mentioned, each week we highlight a few of the stories from our weekly news briefing. It goes out every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific. And our lead the story this week, it's a fantastic article from Scott Bowler, SVP of Ballast Networks. It's entitled CBRS and Adult Environment, Are We Ready? Now, Scott takes a critical look at where we are now in terms of readiness to take advantage of CBRS and the 5G spectrum in our buildings. So, you know, when the FCC released 3.5 CBRS to the public, network operators started going crazy buying spectrum at auction. And mainly because it's a natural as an adjunct, not necessarily a complete replacement, but an adjunct to Wi-Fi and cellular for voice data and IoT applications in buildings. And up until now, if you wanted high capacity, stable connectivity in high density environments like office buildings, sports arenas, transit, shopping malls, et cetera, you needed a distributed antenna system, DAS, and that's expensive. Historically, in some cases, carriers were open to contribute to, or in some cases, entirely pick up the bill for a costly DAS infrastructure. That's all changed now. And with bandwidth hungry tenants demanding faster, more reliable connections, owners are looking for cost-effective alternatives. Now, CBRS can potentially bring higher speeds, of course, lower latency, better data control at a lower cost, but still, there's a lot of questions out there. When are we going to see the necessary chipsets and devices? Who's going to pay for the infrastructure? The carriers? Probably not. The owners? Probably. What will the adoption curve look like in 1, 3, maybe 5 years? I encourage you all to read this great article, and thank you, Scott Bowler, for this great piece. Next, I want to shout out to our tech partner, iOffice. So in this week's article, Chad Smith, VP of Product Strategy, he focuses on the pros and cons of corporate real estate consolidation and subleasing. So with or without a pandemic, companies aren't subleasing to make money. They're subleasing to recover rent obligations and mitigate financial risk and deal with a lot of unused square footage. And in the second and third quarters of 2020, corporate tenants offered a record 42 million square feet of corporate real estate space for sublease. But what was born of necessity is quickly becoming the norm in many companies, especially those who've chosen to continue their remote work policies indefinitely. In this excellent article, Chad dives into key considerations for consolidating space as well as the pros and cons of subleasing. Great read. And then finally, from MIT's Technology Review, can your elevators be hacked? No surprise, the attack surface for cyber threats growing exponentially. It's not only computer networks, but sensors, cloud devices, IoT devices, building systems. They're all vulnerable. And since they have chipsets and computer controllers, they can be hacked and sometimes even leveraged to gain access to enterprise networks, including sensitive files, financial information, trade secrets, and the like. After the ransomware attacks we've recently seen, like Colonial Pipeline, folks are starting to wonder, could that happen to us? How secure are we? So knowing your company's risk profile is so important, a first step to knowing what tools to invest in. And bear in mind, AI and machine learning are helping visualize risk patterns and are important tools to consider today. So this is a great conversation on the topic of something I believe is critically important today. So that's it for me. Unfortunately, I'm out of time, but there's much more in our weekly news briefing. Check it out, and I'll see you all next week.